You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Edition of Technology Bites, flying in missing geek formation.
We've got a afflicted call to say that he is running late. Unfortunately, he is also the keeper of all the Skype equipment, so we have no Peter Hughes. So we're in dual missing geek formation. That's with afflicted right. out. Afflicted does not go out by himself. He takes others with him. You're going down, pal.
Well, I tried to get in touch with Pete to tell him to call in, so we'll see if...
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. Regardless of the missing geeks, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse,
filling in for everybody. All right, so we're really glad you could tune in. Those of you that can make it and are not also otherwise late or being denied access and service to Technology Bites here. All right, you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's our website. That's got most of the information you'll need. It was very refreshing or reassuring to me that it wasn't reassuring to me that I'd forgotten to post the podcast from last Wednesday, but because I was so anxious about DEF CON, I forgot to post the podcast. And so during DEF CON, I got a number of emails from people who said that they, look, we got Peter on the line. Awesome. Hey, Peter.
Hey.
All right. Sorry about that. But we'll see if we can get Skype up and running here in a minute or whenever Afflicted shows up. But I was just saying that while we were at DEF CON, I got a number of emails throughout the con saying, where's the podcast? You know, one from Australia, one from, like, you know, other parts of the world. And so... before we'd gotten too much of our party on, I actually borrowed somebody's laptop that I felt confident that it wasn't going to, like, you know, steal all my information at the hotel at the Palm and posted the podcast while we were there. So,
what kind of person has a laptop at a hacker conference that's safe to use?
People that, you know, the people that come to a con, there's two kinds of people that come to, well, there's three kinds of people that come to a con, to a DEF CON or a hacker convention. And the first kind is the one that's up to no good. You know, his computer's fully loaded with all of his hacker tools and he's up to no good. And then there's the person who comes with a computer that is just completely stripped down with no personal information because he knows that person number one is there in abundance. So you can hack my computer. There's nothing on there for you to get. And then there's the kind of person who's like, what's a hacker con? It's all security source.
Right this way.
Well, the guy I borrowed the laptop from, I identified as character number two. He'd brought a laptop to be able to do some things, but he wasn't there to steal stuff, and he was also not having his computer full of stuff that could have been stolen. So I was able to use that and log into the website. But if the website goes down and we get, you know, Nye and Kat singing on our homepage, yeah, then we'll know. But this was the beyond that, I used it in a hotel that was not where the conference was. We had actually gone to a party at the Palms, and well, actually, we created a party at the Palms. This is like the best story of the whole convention is we had hooked up with, what was the guy's name whose room it was? I just wanted
to Ryan, yeah. Ryan. He does security for Major League Baseball.
Okay. So Ryan was a Major League Baseball security guy, and he had somehow gotten this really nice room at the Palm. And he said, we're going to have a pre-party at my room, but we got to get there. We got to get alcohol. We got to get all the party supplies. So, Emily, who I met at the con, she's a party planner. So she's organizing. There's 20 geeks at the bar at the hotel, and she knows that these 20 geeks need to get to a liquor store and then to the hotel, the Palm Hotel, to his room, Ryan's room. And so she organizes a limousine. So we get this like stretch. It was not a Hummer. It was not an Explorer. It was a
just a really big, cool limo. But it was an SUV limo. I don't know.
It was an SUV limo. Yeah, gotcha. Might have been a Navigator
Escalade
limo.
Escalade or something.
Yeah. It was an Escalade.
That's right. Big pimp.
So we're standing out in front. We're standing out in front of the hotel, and of course Emily's like spots. She doesn't recognize the driver right away. There's this guy standing at the door, and she thinks, "Is he with us? That's the driver. He's just helping us out." But then we got a stowaway. We got Emmanuel Goldstein. From 2600 from Off the Hook at WVAI. Apparently he needed a ride part of the way to somewhere else. And so he rode with us in the limo. I think Emily had something to do with that. So we got a ride. We rode with, so everybody's getting their picture taken with Emmanuel Goldstein. So that was pretty cool. And then we got to that party and the balcony was locked. They wouldn't give him the keys, but everybody, not everybody, all the right people had their lock picking tools. So the doors were no longer, they went from being locked to being unlocked mysteriously. So we had access to the balcony. That was very nice. Palm is listening in right now.
I didn't know anything about that, for the record.
I didn't know anything about it. I just know that one day, you know, there were, I mean, I could put two and two together.
Surely the hotel people came up and gave us keys or something like that.
You think that's what happened? Yeah. I'm sure that's what happened. It was a good time. It was a very good time. So, all right. So, anyway, visit us online at geekradio.com. All the podcasts are up. The latest one should be okay. I think I did it right. But it was, you know, one of those nights. I'm still tired.
When you download that podcast, make sure and run the executable that comes with it.
EXE rhymes with MP3. What are you talking about? It's the same thing. Technologybytes.exe. Run that through your iTunes and see what you get. But, yeah, it was a very interesting very interesting time that we had.
Are you rested up? Are you recovered?
I'm more or less back. I'm more or less back. The flight coming back Sunday was delayed by a couple of hours due to some weather or something. But we had an extra special surprise because Flicked came out.
What?
Yeah. I'm telling you.
He drove his truck?
No.
Motorcycle?
he drove his motorcycle to the airport and flew. But Flicked, you know, I had a room by myself, so we didn't get married.
Are you sure?
As far as I know, I've only still got the one ring.
Las Vegas has some weird rules about that, so
I couldn't really
check.
You can probably get it annulled. It's not too late.
You guys were in Vegas. Did you see Elvis?
He got on the elevator with us at the Palm.
All right.
You saw him, the guy in the suit.
I don't recall, but that doesn't mean anything.
You talked to him. Really? You were like, you were gay for Elvis. Come on. All right, so those are just the stories we can tell you about. I think obviously the main rule of Elvis or Vegas is what happens there stays there, and there's some stuff that really needs to stay there. So we'll leave it at that.
But if you've watched The Hangover, you have a pretty good idea how the second and third day went.
Thank God it was a temporary tattoo. That's all I can say. It was an iron-on. All right, so we're waiting for Flick, and hopefully he will show up here after a bit, but we're going to move on with the show. Gave you the website. We're on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in Pound Tech Bytes, or you can find us via the website. We have a Java client where you can access the IRC that way. You can also send questions via the website. And the phone number for a little bit later on is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. But for now, we're going to quickly go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, this week, the big story, you may have heard about it or not, because it's kind of business world geeky, which obviously we don't focus on too much. But this one is kind of amazing. You know, wasn't that long ago that Apple passed Microsoft in terms of some of their sales, and then they passed them in terms of their market cap as far as their value of the company and stock and so on. But yesterday, Apple Computer became the largest, most valuable company in the world, beating out Exxon for the highest valued company in the world. Apple's market cap now stands at $337.17 billion, over $6 billion more than Exxon's $330.77 billion market cap. It's only one way of measuring a company's value, and you could certainly argue that Exxon's chief product, oil, is a far more vital commodity to the world market than Mac's, iPhones, and iPads, unless you're a major Mac fanboy. It is still a big moment for Apple, and the psychological impact of having the world's highest market cap is pretty phenomenal for a company that was on the ropes just 12 years ago. So it's impossible to say if Apple will hold on to the seat at the top, but it does seem like right now they would really have to screw up to take their value down. So if you thought your Apple fanboy friends were insufferable when the iPhone was successful and the iPad was a big deal, well, now they have yet another reason to lord it up. The other one, though, because of people who I remember using it on me when it was the other way around, the question, here's one for you Apple fanboys if you want to have fun with somebody who, especially, like I said, if they've done it to you in the past. If you asked how come the company or how come we don't use Apple or how come that's not allowed, and they said, well, you know, Microsoft is one of the biggest companies in the computer business, well, now you can flip that around. And you can ask, how come we're going for the second or third largest company, you know, what's up with that? So it might be fun, and it'd probably irritate the hell out of your IT director, so have at it if you want. And on the downside, so there's a neat little thing about Apple. And on the more negative side, on the irritating side, Apple's been engaged in a number of high-profile patent lawsuits with its competitors, especially the ones offering Android-based hardware. And now one of the quieter disputes has gained new attention today, following a discovery that Apple has, in fact, sued Motorola in Europe, claiming that the Motorola Zoom tablet infringes upon the design of Apple's products. The revelation comes in a court document filed in Germany and associated with the preliminary injunction that they won against Samsung yesterday, barring sale of the Galaxy Tab 10.1. The deal is... Now, Apple won a temporary injunction against sales of the Galaxy Tab 10.1, and presumably they're seeking a more permanent injunction against Motorola's offering. Apple also notes in its filing that a preliminary injunction against JTEC, which is a local German company, was granted and further upheld in its entirety following a hearing. They don't say what model of tablet from JTEC was the subject of the injunction, but the last year, JTEC had a 7-inch Android-based tablet, and they appear to no longer be selling that. So this is on the sort of downside. The deal where they you know, where they look too much or act too much like it is kind of, seems like kind of a reach. You know, the JTEC one, there is a picture in, this is, I found this at Mac Rumors. There's a picture, and they do have a dock that looks basically like the Mac OS X dock, running across the bottom of their screen, and then the button, the JTEC one is, does fit the rip-off mode. The Motorola, not so much. And I don't know that people, you know, the Galaxy Tab 10.1 didn't seem to me to be all that similar. But so hopefully the power of being the biggest company or most valuable company in the world won't go to their heads and they'll start suing everybody. And in other news that's probably related, HTC said late today that it would hold a major news announcement tomorrow morning. This kind of announcement, these kinds of announcements are never reserved for product announcements and suggest that the news is relating to a corporate level issue. And the thought is that perhaps it is that they'll be announcing that they've made a deal with Apple following their loss in an ITC patent dispute. So that, you know, that they may be coming up with a deal where they can keep, you know, producing what they've been producing without, problems from Apple. There is a small chance that, that there's a takeover in the works, such as by Microsoft. The Windows Phone developer has been eager to buy market share and made its deal with Nokia for the same reason. HTC's relatively large size, however, as well as antitrust concerns might keep Microsoft away from that kind of deal. But so it could either be a takeover thing or it could be a nasty patent dispute thing, although hopefully a positive resolution. Another dancing around Apple, you know, now they're the biggest in the world. All the stories will be about them. That's not true, but Amazon is going around Apple's, you know, app restrictions on sales by launching a web-based version of the Kindle Reader, allowing users to read their Kindle purchases on any device with a web browser without having to use an app. It's called Kindle Cloud Reader. It has both an online and offline mode and can even sync your last page read across Kindle devices. But while Kindle Cloud Reader could be used by almost anyone, it's clear the design was made for the iPad, allowing Amazon to sidestep Apple's in-app content constraints. And even offer the iPad-friendly Kindle store that it wasn't allowed to put in the native iOS app. The deal is Apple gets a big cut, I think like 30% of sales done inside apps that run on Apple devices. And so this gets them around. Ars Technica has a review on it, and they've had pretty good things to say about it, and so you have that chance. You know, it gives you more opportunities to use it, and you know, new ways to get your same you know, get your e-reading on without having to necessarily buy a Kindle, and without having to pay a premium for reading it on your iPad. In other news, Amazon is suing Apple and some electronic publishers about collusion and price fixing in the electronic book business, because they apparently don't like, and they have been fighting against, Amazon's $9.99 price point and trying to have a higher price point. So, I don't know, it's one of those where, not a pleasant battle, but it's out there and, you should be aware of it. In other interesting news, for all of you out there with Chromebooks, Netflix is now available. They have an app for Chromebook owners. It's available from the Chrome Web Store, and Netflix is offering a one-month free trial to new customers, only special to Chrome OS users. Obviously, Netflix's service is already available to Mac OS X or Windows. Until now, you couldn't run it directly because the app for PCs required Microsoft's Silverlight plugin, which Google does not support. Linux users are still without an app. This follows Netflix's move to provide support for several more Android devices late last month. So it is spreading, and maybe one day it'll get to Linux, too. And if you're wanting to save money, you know, the iPhone 5 inches nearer, the release date for it inches nearer. And if you're not really interested in that, but you did want some kind of iPhone, right now there are big discounts are out there for iPhones. Radio Shack and Target unofficially lowered prices on phones at the end of last month, and now CNET's reporting that through August 20th, Radio Shack is cutting $30 off the iPhone 4 as well as the iPhone 3GS. You can get deeper discounts if you bring in your iPhone 3G or iPhone 3GS and use the company's Trade and Save program, which Dwight's mentioned in the past, using that to get a really low price to get the iPhone 4. The interesting part is that there's an end date on the deal, at least for Radio Shack. The August 20th is their deadline. Apple's expected to bring out the next generation iPhone between now and October, with recent rumors citing the company's launch window for October, though a slew of reports from earlier this year said it would be sometime in September. So we'll keep an eye on it. And again, if you're stuck, if you have to buy something and you're going for an iPhone, definitely look around and see you can get some good deals, depending on where you look. If you're stuck doing it now, at least you can save a few bucks. Another price drop news, the HP touchpad, they dropped their price. Last week they had offered a $100 discount on it. And the price went up. They dropped it for a couple days, and then the price went right back up to normal 2 days later. Apparently, consumer response was such that HP has decided to make the reduction more permanent. According to a reported internal memo from Hewlett-Packard, highlights the decision to permanently price the 16-gig and 32-gig Wi-Fi versions of the tablet at around $400 and $400 for the smaller one, and around $500 for the larger one, effective immediately. And that's confirmed and is the price that you get on Hewlett-Packard's site. So that's about the lowest price other than a refurb that you can get on something in this class. So you can save a little money with that. And finally, this one sort of intertwines with the whole iPhones rumors. AT&T has confirmed that it will not be offering any LTE-capable smartphones until late this year. LTE data cards may come sooner. Put another way, however, it also confirms that AT&T will be offering at least one LTE smartphone before the end of the year. That comes from their Senior Vice President for Mobility and Consumer Markets, who also continued to talk up the HSPA Plus network, noting that it has been working to get the most out of that network as it waited for LTE handsets to mature, and that it will let customers fall back to faster speeds than our competitors when they do eventually make the jump to LTE. So I guess you can throw that into your Apple iPhone, will it have LTE or not, rumor mixing, and come up with whatever you like. It's right now, it's open season. You can make up whatever you like, and you've got half a chance if you put it on a web page that it'll get reported somewhere. So have fun with that. And that's the news.
All right. Thanks for the news. And still no Flicted. What did he? Who actually talked to him?
He texted me.
Did he
I believe it was actually him. You know, it could have been. He could have been hackered or something. I don't know.
I got a text from him.
Did you?
Yeah, he's with a consultant at work.
I see. And
running longer than expected.
Okay.
Well, real business.
You have to pity anybody who's stuck with a consultant.
Oh, so this text that I got from that said, OMG, send me your password. That's not...
No, that couldn't have been him.
Not him?
No. But send your password anyway, just in case he needs it.
Call us with your password.
Just say it on the air. He's listening. All right. So phone number, if you'd like to be on the air with us tonight, is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you're listening on a Wednesday night between 8 and 10 Central Standard Time, which is when we are broadcast live. All right, so no calls in the queue, so we can just twiddle our thumbs for a bit here as we wait for people. Dwight actually is twiddling his thumbs for reals. For reals.
It's good exercise.
Is it?
Yeah.
So you know you're at a DEF CON party when the music is just really going really loud and the beat's really, really good, then all of a sudden somebody mixes in Nyan Cat.
Yeah, the Nyan Cat came in. I don't even know how, that's hard to pronounce.
Nyan?
Nyan. N-Y-A-N. Nyan Cat? How do you say that?
So there were and then Mario Brothers.
Yeah. I think they had War Games on and High Def in the back.
They had one screen had Hackers on it, and the other one had War Games on it. And they had on the War Games one, they had the color tweaked so bad that everybody's faces were blue. But it was in that super high definition where it looked 3D, like it was disturbing. But imagine the colors being off to boot. It was very surreal, very odd, and good. I mean, it was just such a weird blending of some of it was. You know, was just geeky, trying to be cool, and then, you know, full of fail. And then some of it was geeky and cool, kind of coming together into a nice harmony.
Most of our cool stuff was found in unexpected places, I'd say. Like, most of the things we had planned didn't necessarily go as planned, but all the really fun things just kind of materialized, just kind of happened.
You know? I will say this. I don't think I could have done it without, you know, having people on the ground that I knew. I mean, I benefited greatly from Barrett, you know, waiting how long in line to...
2 hours, 40 minutes. I got there early, too. I woke up early for that.
And they handed out 10,000 badges, and then there was paper badges after that. So, I was fortunate to have that, and then some other people on the ground that I knew or that Barrett knew and that I got to meet that were open to meeting Barrett's friends. So the having people to talk to and interact with and kind of have things happening, if you go into that not knowing anybody, you can still have a good time. I would imagine you can get to all the conferences are very interesting. I mean, not all of them, but many of them are quite interesting, and they were showing them in the rooms on closed circuit television. Which was also good. So, like, if you did manage to meet some people and have too good a time the night before, DEF CON became BedCon. But if you're going out there, next one coming up, you know, next year is the 20th anniversary, and it's going to probably be nuts.
And huge.
They're talking about they said they don't have any line on this, but their plan is to have Kraftwerk play it.
Wow.
That would be something.
That would be huge.
That would be way huge. I'd go to DEF CON, the cost of admission just to see that.
See, I don't know. Maybe they could go bigger. I think Kraftwerk fighting the Blue Man Group and the winner performs.
Or that would be the performance. Actually, they should have Devo versus the Blue Man Group. That would be
Devo versus Kraftwerk.
At any rate, should be pretty good. We do have a call in the queue, but I want to give out the phone number one more time before we... let's see. Oh, that's somebody else's note on there. Keep looking at the note at the bottom of the screen. And it's not our note.
I don't have a note on this side, so there's something up with the software. Can you see that there's a call? On
I can.
Hold? Okay.
I can. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, who do we have up?
All right. Up next, we're going to take this one, and that's Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, please. Quick question. I heard you talking about the tablets, and what it was is I travel a lot, and I don't like lugging along a big laptop with me and worrying about, like, using public Wi-Fi. I heard you mention, the BlackBerry or Samsung. What would be a good tablet to carry that you don't have to worry about, like, using a public Wi-Fi and contracting a virus or something like that? Would it be like HP's, their WebOS from Palm, or maybe the BlackBerry RIM? Did any of them susceptible to viruses?
Well, everything's susceptible to viruses.
Right.
Just whether or not there's, you know, you're... Right now, tablets are kind of enjoying a little bit of, security, you know, with people not targeting, though. We did see some changes in that over the weekend at DEF CON where people are starting to target mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So it's still incumbent upon you to be careful what you do with any of these devices?
I would say probably at this point, the three most secure tablets at the moment would be the iPad, because all of the apps, unless you jailbreak it, go through Apple's scrutiny before you get access to it. The other would be the BlackBerry tablet, mainly because there's probably only about eight of them in use and nobody's going to write a virus for one that has only eight people using it, and then the WebOS partly for the same thing. You know, the one, if you're worried about security, I think you might want to stay away from Android, because that's really the only one at the moment that has a slew of viruses targeting it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Have you had any experience? Because I heard the BlackBerry RIM was kind of buggy and kept crashing and stuff.
I've had a review unit, and it was kind of buggy, but in the time that I had it, I saw at least two updates to it. They update it frequently. The one thing about the BlackBerry tablet is that there's no native BlackBerry email for it. You have to have a BlackBerry phone, and you pair it with the phone, and then it uses the email off the phone. So that's one thing to keep in mind about the BlackBerry tablet. I really like the HP TouchPad. It's a really nice tablet, really nice software. It's a little sluggish compared to the iPad 2. But the software is really good, and if they could just get some apps for it, I think it would be quite a nice tablet to own.
All right, well, great. It's great information.
All right.
Sure to appreciate it, Dwight. All right. And Lee.
No problem. Thanks for your call tonight.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right. So Scout is actually active on the IRC. Scout was
cool.
He was the quintessential good host. He was the facilitator for all that was good at DEF CON.
Yeah, he's saying Android is extremely Swissy right now.
The thing they had a charging station set up at DEF CON, so people could charge their phones if anybody was stupid enough to plug foreign USB into their phone and give people access.
Did they have an iOS connection for charging your iOS?
I didn't notice that they had that. I think a lot of stuff was targeting Android for this, except for the man in the middle.
I did for a column about a week or two ago. I did an interview with Kevin Mitnick, who was at DEF CON. And I asked him at the end of the interview, which I didn't use this in the column, I asked him what kind of phone he uses. And he says an iPhone. He says Android is too insecure. So if Kevin Mitnick thinks it's too insecure, you know.
I mean, if it's insecure enough for someone like Mitnick to hack it, then it's not very secure. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. So read the note. 713-526-5738. If you want to call and be on the air with Technology Bites, we're taking calls. We are going to go to the next call, which is...
That would be Mike on line two.
Hey, Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. My call is regarding an iPhone 5 rumor, and it's pretty legit. And
legit and rumor, yeah.
Coming from Steve Jobs himself, he told me.
Oh, yeah.
We had lunch on Sunday, and he told me. Anyway, iPhone 5 is going to have a bigger screen, not sure the dimensions.
Well, wait a second. I mean, this is just, I mean, really, seriously, though, I mean, there are rumors. The rumors are pretty readily available. Why are we sharing a rumor?
Well, because it's pretty awesome, and I think that...
Well, how do we know that the rumor's true? I mean, beside the fact that you just lied to me about talking to Steve Jobs.
Well, that was a joke. I didn't really speak to Steve Jobs.
All right. Well, I could create a rumor about the iPhone 5 right now.
Well, anyway, this is a legit rumor.
How is it legit? Tell me how it's legit.
It just is. I go through the right channels that I know people that know these things.
You know people. You heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another that you've been messing around.
Precisely, but it came from a legit source. Anyway, you want to hear the rumor.
All right, let's hear the rumor.
All right. iPhone 5 has a bigger screen, but it's also going to have access to this cloud network that everybody's buzzing about. And
iOS 5, right.
Okay, anyway, that's going to be available, but also what's going to be available is the Starscream app. Starscream app, when you press it,
I don't know what that is, but it didn't.
That was that there's a little red.
That's something too close to the ER on there, and you get.
Yeah.
Nice try.
Nice try, but.
Actually, not really a nice try.
No, because you're pwned. All right, 713-526-5738. I think we actually might have got one before he had a chance to do his thing. So thanks, Groovehouse.
Sure.
Ever vigilant?
Yes.
Shields up?
Shields up.
Shields up.
Don't all drop right. The name of a transformer before you release the lights.
I guess he's still broken up with his girlfriend. All right. Who wasn't that hot to begin with anyway? So, hey, Groovehouse.
Hey, Jaylee.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Sunny.
Sunny.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're on the air with Technology Bites. What can we do for you?
Great. Hey, listen, I bought the software, CD burner software called Roxio. It's on my old laptop, and I bought a new laptop. Unfortunately, I can't find this original CD in which the whole software came in.
Okay.
Is there any way I can transfer from the old computer to the new computer that software?
Roxio's software is available from their website. Then you could download it if you have the license key for it.
Do you have the key still by chance?
I'll have to look into my computer to find the key then, the old computer.
You might be able to fire up the old computer and do the help about and look at your license key and be able to make a note of that.
Okay.
And then you could just download, you might be able to download the software if they still have that version available for download and reinstall it. Otherwise, you're looking at having to move and install the application from one computer to another. There are programs that claim that they will do that, and I don't know the name of one, because what happens when you install a program is that it makes edits to the registry, it drops files not only in the application folder, but it puts other files in shared folders and in the system folders for the operating system. So there's not like this one little thing where you just go scoop up all the application and move it to the new computer. You have to have something that will go get all the registry entries that are pertinent to that install as well as the other shared files and move those as well. So it's very difficult to do.
I thought maybe there might be some programs like, you know, when you do uninstall, I mean, it goes into every registry or...
Although you'd be amazed that the uninstall leaves a lot of errant registry entries laying around. Most uninstall applications don't clean everything out.
And particularly Roxio. Roxio makes all kinds of changes to the Windows system, and in fact a bad uninstall of Roxio can do things like disable your CD drive. So it's not something you want to mess with. You want to get the...
So maybe another question would be,
how old is that version of Roxio anyway?
It's about 3-4 years old.
Is the new computer running Windows 7?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
It might be that that older version of Roxio is not compatible with Windows 7.
Probably not. Okay.
I mean,
software would you recommend if Roxio?
Well, Windows 7 has some very good built-in capability for dealing with burning DVDs and CD-ROMs. You may not need a third-party application. What do you use Roxio for?
I'm sorry.
What do you use the Roxio program for?
Burning CDs.
Just music CDs or data CDs? I mean, you're not making, like, elaborate video presentations or slideshows?
No, it's just music CDs.
Windows 7, and using, like, Windows Media Player or even iTunes, you can burn and rip CDs all day long without paying for software to do that.
Yeah, but I think the Roxio has a lot of easier, what you call, the menu that you can move and drop and all that.
Well, are you burning music CDs and DVDs for yourself?
Yes.
Uh-huh. iTunes.
Okay.
It's worth looking into, but otherwise you could try to contact Roxio and see if they can offer you any kind of replacement media.
Or they may give you a discount on the newest version.
Right.
That's right. Okay. All right. Great, guys. Thanks. Always enjoy your show.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight. All right.
Okay.
I know what he's talking about. Back when I was burning a lot of CDs, I just don't do that anymore. But Roxio is great, and I would prefer that over iTunes if I was used to it, you know, if that's the one I was using. So, but you ought to check and see if there's a new version. It's not that expensive, particularly if they're offering a discount for upgraders.
Yeah. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us tonight. So Groovehouse is in the process currently of screening a call to make sure that, you know, there's no shenanigans. And we always appreciate, you know, his shenanigan radar being up, shields up. But unfortunately, because Flick is not here, I guess we could probably take the call. We could take the call. I think.
There we go.
Oh, okay. So we're going to go ahead and take this call on the air. Susan, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I got a new computer, a Dell, about 3 months ago, and moved all my old stuff over. And in Microsoft Outlook now, the little cache of names that automatically pops up after you've emailed somebody,
uh-huh.
every time I close out of Outlook, and I open it again, it's the names are gone, so it's like starting all over. I've got all my contacts, but I want all the little automatic pop-up of the names.
Right, you want the autocomplete or the nickname, what they call the nickname cache in Outlook. What version? Uh-huh. What version of Outlook is it?
It's going to be whatever the newest thing is, because it's all
2010.
Do you have Outlook 2010?
I'm sure that's what it is.
Did you install that on the new computer, or did you try to drag it over from the old computer? How did you get on the new computer?
It was installed. We had an IT guy who installed it.
All right, well, the first thing you're going to want to do is make sure that the nickname cache option is turned on.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember, I don't have a computer with Outlook on it in front of me, but if you Google search Outlook nickname cache.
Outlook nickname cache?
Yeah. Let's see. This tells about how to remove them, how to clear the cache. You'll find stuff that tells you how to enable that. It's an option in the, you might just need to reset it in Outlook, but if you go to the file tab in Outlook, then you can go to your options, and then there's a section in that first tab that talks about the autocomplete, and if you click on that, it'll take you to the autocomplete settings. But if you Google it, you can find some step-by-step instructions. What I would do is I'd make sure that it's enabled, and if necessary, you could try just resetting it.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
I actually, I kind of had little sympathy for the nickname cache thing, but then I cleared mine just on a whim to proof of concept, and then I realized that mine wasn't auto-completing anymore, and it was kind of annoying. I actually kind of enjoy the nickname cache because you start typing a few characters, and then it suggests the name, and then you tab.
But what I find with the cache is that there are always some that you expect to be there that aren't. Like, I have some people who I email frequently, and they're not in my contacts necessarily, and so I expect them to be there, and suddenly they won't be there.
Really?
Yeah. It's just kind of, and it's like at random. It's like it loses some at random.
Maybe resetting the cache would be good for you as well.
Oh, no. No, because I
don't want to lose the ones I've got.
Right. I do rely on it. So, once you do type it in, you type it in from memory, it's good. You know, what's interesting is, when I was younger, and we're talking like in my 20s, so I think I lost this pretty
And early. Your 20s are in the 20s.
But I'm fine with it. So I used to be able to remember phone numbers better than I could people's names.
PR549. That's
yes,
why.
I used to walk up to people at parties and like do their phone numbers at them.
But that was, you were talking about, when they actually had letters in their phone numbers?
No, wasn't that far back.
Okay, because I remember my grandmother was like Pennsylvania
right.
something.
Right. So, and I lost that ability, but now I can remember people's email addresses before I often remember their names.
Wow.
Which is kind of, and fortunately, sometimes it has their name in it. But
how many email addresses do you have? Do you think?
I'd have to count them.
It's limited. The Outlook 2003 can only hold up to 1,000 autocompletes, and
that's
2007
why.
And 2010 can only go to 2,000. There's a registry hack you can do to up it, but that you may be cycling through those, and then they drop
that's
off.
Probably it. That's probably it. Yep.
All right. 713-526-5738. If you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites, you can call that number, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
The last person who called that number was Ed, and he's on now.
Hi, Ed. You're on the air with Technology Bites.
What's going on, guys?
You know, just hanging in there.
Hey, that's what's up. Hey, I've got a question. I'm interested in putting internet in my 18-wheeler. But my issue is I cover large patches of ground in a very quick amount of time. And my phone is always dropping a signal, and I'm worried about the Wi-Fi doing the same thing.
So you're not driving and interneting at the same time, right?
Well, me personally, no, but a lot of times my wife and my kids ride with me. And they would like to have constant entertainment at all times, because if not, they get on my nerves.
The only thing that you're... The option for that is going to be one of the Wi-Fi broadband, you know, like Clear or AT&T or something like that, where you get a mobile hotspot.
How are you all over the country, or where do you drive mostly? Because the Clear thing, the Wi-Fi is just in the WiMAX is just in big cities right now. It's just going to be...
It won't be out in the open road. That's the problem.
I run mostly Houston to the East Coast, and then every once in a while I run around Wyoming.
What, something like, yeah, like a Verizon MiFi is probably, Verizon is probably has the best overall coverage for that kind of thing, and a Verizon MiFi would probably do you, although you are going to run into places where it's going to drop. There's just no way around that.
Right. You get into, you know, where there's not very much population, the telcos, they don't put, you know, they don't try to cover big expanses of desert so Wile E. Coyote can have access to Acme.com.
You're in pretty good shape if you stay on freeways. A lot of the carriers, particularly in more urban states, will have towers along freeways. But even, you know, particularly in the deep south, you're gonna run into some holes.
A few years ago, I read about Willie Nelson for his bus that they did like multiple providers. And had it where it was sort of all slaved together, so it would use the one that worked best. And, you know, if it was in a place where they were all working, it was consuming, using it to get more bandwidth.
I debated doing that already.
Obviously, there's a little bit of there's a little bit more tricky steps to making that work. But if it came down to like two places that, you know, two companies that covered. That gave you total coverage or gave you more coverage between switching off on them, then it might work.
Okay. And one more question. I want to make a comment. I've got the original MacBook Ben AirBook. It's actually a Dell. It's ancient, running on XP. This thing doesn't have an optical drive. It's running XP. It's pretty much useless for anything except for Farmville. I'd like to keep something about the same size, but I don't want to pay $1,000 for a laptop.
And what is it? Is it a Dell? Is it a netbook?
No, it's actually an older Dell laptop. It came with a docking station that had an optical drive, which I promptly threw out the window. It was useless. And I just used the laptop part itself. I mean, it's super slow, but it lets me get internet pretty much anywhere I'm at.
Well, I mean, you could look at the current offering of netbooks, which will run you between about $250 and $450 for a reasonable one of those. But you could also look at some of the lower-end laptops, which are going to be in the $400 to $600 range.
Yeah, I'd rather have a laptop just because my eyesight, you know, as I'm getting older, the little small screen, my kids love them, but I can't.
Well, go to one of the computer big box stores, you know, go to a computer store and take a look at what they're offering on, you know, they usually line up their laptops from the cheapest to the most expensive. Go look at the less expensive ones and put your hands on one and see what you think about the display and the keyboard and so forth.
The size that would probably fit your pocketbook, and particularly if you're traveling, is probably the 13 to 14 inch, and that's probably where you'll find your sweet spot.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Y'all be good.
All right. Keep on trucking.
Already.
All right.
10-4.
10-4, good buddy. Breaker, breaker. A bear report here. 713-526-5738. We got about 12 minutes, or actually about 10 minutes before we need to break for some station business, but we've got some time if we wanted to call in and be on the air with us here on Technology Bites.
We did have a caller call in and wanted to know what you guys ate in Vegas. Well, what was food like for hackers?
We ate a lot of line, you know, a whole bunch of waiting.
The thing about the... my recollection of Vegas was that, you know, food and all that stuff was cheap, but it's not anymore. They get you, and the food
is definitely not cheap.
It's not cheap.
It's fancy.
And it is fancy. But the thing that they ran into with this convention was that the restaurants inside the Rio were completely overwhelmed. They were completely overwhelmed. The lines to get in to get food were just, I mean, even the Burger King, you know, where you could spend about $15 getting a Happy Meal or whatever the Burger King equivalent is. I ended up on one day walking over to the, not the Golden Nugget, but whatever that one was over there, a Gold Coast casino was nearby, and they had a buffet. So there's a lot of buffet eating going on. And the two Starbucks, maybe three, all had long lines all the time. food was scarce.
And there were 30 people deep in the Starbucks line at times, 40 people deep. So, wow. You know, if you had like 20 minutes before talks, between talks, a lot of times I would just skip. So I think that's what a lot of people did.
Yeah. So, which I know, but there's at least one situation where Barrett was not properly nourished.
No.
And that did not end well, but we'll leave it at that. But the food overall, it's not worth what you pay for it in Vegas. And I'll, you know, the ways around that, obviously, are if you're gambling, if you go to Vegas to gamble, you can get your cocktails for free. You can get you get these player cards. You can get discounts on things, and you know they'll take care of you. But at my recollection, my first time going to Vegas, it was like $5 buffets in the casinos, and they wanted to keep you there. But now it's more of a destination, and especially with the Rio, because you're not going to go to another casino. It's not on the strip. It's across the freeway. So you don't get to, go get your choice of places to eat. They've got you trapped there.
In the place where DEF CON used to be at the Riviera, there's a really old classic Vegas buffet. Did you ever eat in
there? I went there. It was definitely old. And it was in Vegas.
That's right. And some of the food was
from
like the 60s.
Salisbury steak.
Actually, they don't have it anymore. The last time I was there, because I stayed at the Riviera when I go to CES. But the last time I was there, they had a fantastic omelet station. If you go there in the morning, they would bake you an omelet that was just wonderful.
Was it expensive?
No, it's just like $8, and it's right. All you can eat.
Okay.
So I was looking forward when I went back to CES in January. I thought, oh boy, I'm going to get this omelet. No more omelet stations. Aww. Like, I'm not staying through the Riviera. I'm not going to stay there if I can't get my omelet.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it was not a cheap endeavor. I mean, the cash machine, the ATM machine there, which I didn't use, but I did make a note of the fact that they charged you $5 to withdraw your money. You know, so that was kind of
a lot of people horrible. Bring groceries back, which is probably where we messed up. We probably should hit a grocery store. And
well, I was like pleased the room had a refrigerator in it, so we should have stocked up, but we weren't that smart. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we've got a few minutes before the station break. If you got a quick question that you'd like to ask the hosts of Technology Bites, we'd be happy to take that call.
Or I have a Flicted sighting.
We have a Flicted sighting. He has arrived. Flicted is in the house. And here, I have this for you, Flicted. I brought this for you. This is yours. He can't hear me because he has headphones on. All right.
You have a gift waiting for you.
It's not a gift. It's a return to sender.
It's a re-gift.
Well, the badges that they gave for DEF CON were made of titanium, and Flicted didn't have any checked luggage. He is worried that they might take his badge from him because he is fully planning to opt out of the body scan, so they probably would have searched his stuff.
I took mine on the plane, but in retrospect, I guess we could have, wreaked havoc and hijacked stuff and done all kinds of naughtiness with the badges.
Could have probably.
Man, it's like, I don't think you can make jokes like that on the radio, can you?
You can't make them in the airport.
You can't make them in the airport. You can make them on the air, I think.
We might have deciphered something. Well, at 30,000 feet, they wouldn't have liked that.
Maybe I should leave before the feds get here. I didn't say it, okay? I wasn't the one that said it.
All right, let's take this call here in the last few minutes. You want to hit that button there for me, Barrett?
I can do that.
Francis, you're on the air.
Francois,
sorry about that.
Good day, gents.
Good day.
I have a Holly projection. It's projection, 4, the number 4, DI, for direct injection. And it has software with it. And I've had this for some time, and it was today just saving the software onto a thumb drive. And the version I have is 1999 for Windows 95, 98, and NT. Ha ha.
Wow.
Okay, so here's the deal. It's just the brain, and there's a chip. I've gone to the Holly site. My question is, I have all the disk, and there's maps and all of that for tuning the fuel injection. This is like a carburetor replacement where you bolt it on to the manifold. So my question is, there's an EEPROM that's on their website, and how do I convert all of this stuff to, modern, to where I have a mini laptop that I can plug in like I do my software and my cable for our Volkswagen.
I honestly don't know, but maybe
I actually attended a car hacking workshop on Friday. Is it CAN bus 2 or is it OBD 2? Do you know?
No, it's way before that.
Oh, I can't help you.
Is it serial? Hello?
You there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
We're still here.
Yeah, I don't know. Something's happening.
You're hacking the phone.
Yeah, I'm sure it is serial.
I mean, the only thing I could suggest, because I don't know enough about this, is maybe you could get a regular small laptop and load a virtualization on there and load up an instance of Windows 95 or something and then load this software into that.
Uh-huh.
And that might allow, I know some people who are using this older software will do that to run it. I know a woman who uses this weird Windows 95 software to manage her quilting machine or a sewing machine that does embroidery.
Right.
And she has a virtual machine loaded up with Windows XP on her Mac, which controls this hardware to do that for. So that might be an option
for you.
Well,
there's a newer version that I've already saved. But I'm not sure as far as like all the connections and then the EEPROM chip, how to tell. And unfortunately, there is no customer service to speak
No,
of.
But I bet you there's discussion forums on it somewhere.
Yeah, look, there's not a whole lot. You know, because what they did was, like most companies, they replaced it with, they call it a Commander 950, which is like, it's a more modern unit. So basically what I'm trying to do is I bought a functioning system that fits a car like what I have. And my only difference is that like I want to do an updated version of it for this reason, because it's easier to tune and to load the existing maps instead of having to spend thousands of hours of trying to tune.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you on this. I would just start putting in Holley Projection DI discussion forum into a Google search engine and start hunting around. There are people I'm finding that are talking about it. And you might be able to inject yourself into some of those conversations or see if they can help point you in the right direction. I'm sure there's still enthusiasts for that are trying to do something similar to what you're trying to
do. Right, yeah, because this is a pretty basic system.
Yeah.
You know, and the EEPROM chip, that's the thing, is there's really no information on it other than it says it's for sale, you can buy it, it's like $65.
Have you called them?
Not yet.
I'd go that route. But listen, I got to wrap this up. We're going to have to take a station break here. But
okay, thanks.
I wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right. That's a great question. I have no idea. You know, there's some of this weird older technology that's kind of specialized that has not been ported over really well to more modern systems. And thank you for that. All right, well, we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back after some station business. This is Technology Bites Radio. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's
Groovehouse.
Now he's not filling in for anyone.
We're all here.
Throughout September, Houston Rescue and Restore Coalition will host its 5th annual Human Trafficking Awareness Month. A variety of events will take place, such as a 5K run, an interfaith service, a film series, a fair trade shopping event, and much more. Many of the events will be free of charge and open to the public. Through these events, HRRC hopes to educate and engage the community on the issue of human trafficking. For more information about Human Trafficking Awareness Month, visit HoustonRR.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Would you like to feel more peace and happiness in your relationships and enhance your ability to communicate with others? Would you like a deeper awareness and acceptance of your feelings and needs, all of them? If you are curious about these possibilities, Join us on September 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Dominican Center, 6501 Almeida, for a free 3-hour introduction to a process known as compassionate communication, or also known as nonviolent communication. This free 3-hour introduction will be followed by a 3-day training and facilitated by Raj Gill, the founder of the Freedom Project Canada. For more information, visit www.houstonnvc.org or phone Susan at 281-412-4564. Please join us.
All right, and we're back. Welcome back to Technology Bites. I think we're going to do a little switch over to get Peter on the Skype. Did we do that?
I'm already here.
All right, so we can actually drop that. I don't know if you know how, I guess. Excellent. So, perfect. All right, so welcome back to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
All right, so we got that out of the way. I just try to make things smooth and clean, and this is how we're going to do it. Now we're going to take a quick jaunt over to Barrett Land and do Barrett Time.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. We're freshly back from DEF CON, and so that you, the listener, can more easily understand all of our new hacker jargon, we're going to take a few minutes to run you through some basic InfoSec terms to make sure everyone's on the same page. So first question, what does InfoSec stand for?
Information security.
There you go. Yeah, InfoSec involves...
I'm a hacker!
Protecting information and information systems from unauthorized access, use, disclosure, disruption, modification, perusal, inspection, recording, or destruction. And we're going to get in some hats. So Black Hat.
Black Hat is evil hacker.
Yeah, malevolent hacker, also known as a cracker. White Hat?
Good hacker. Good Somebody's hacker. In the good, you know, protecting you from the Black Hats.
Yeah, these are the people who strive to protect you. Gray Hat.
You're not quite sure about him.
Yeah, these people could go either way. I think I was mistaken for a gray hat this week. Red Hat?
A Red Hat Linux user.
Oh, yeah. It's a society for women approaching the age of 50 and beyond. Be careful. These are some of the most violent hackers in the world. Oh, hold on. I misread that. These are some of the most violent hackers in the world. It's also a Linux distribution.
Ooh, what about a green gill?
Ooh, yeah. I spotted one of those, unfortunately, at DEF CON.
In the mirror.
Pin tester.
Somebody who tests electronic circuit boards.
Yeah, they make sure your markers are fresh. Or it's short for a penetration tester. Oh. These are usually InfoSec consultants.
P-E-N. You mispronounced
P-E-N.
It.
Oh, I did P-I-N.
You said pin, but I heard pin.
These are usually InfoSec consultants that evaluate the security of a system by simulating an attack from a malicious source. So I think we're kind of warmed up in this period of DEF CON. The remaining questions will be handled Hacker Jeopardy style. So all answers must be in the form of the question. To speed things up, we'll be taking all questions from the following category, therapists. First one is a group of pen testers that assesses the security of an organization. The term is borrowed from the military's use of it while conducting war games. Nope.
What is DEF CON?
Red Team. What is Red Team?
What is a Red Team?
Okay. In pen testing or other InfoSec games or simulations, these people are the defenders.
What is the blue team?
Yes, you got it. And this kind of gets to the heart of what DEF CON is really all about. In order to defend, you must first learn to attack. Also, I think the red team always wins. Next up, weakness, which allows an attacker to reduce a system's confidentiality, integrity, or availability.
What is a vulnerability?
Yes. Next, from the French, meaning achievement or accomplishment. It's a piece of software, a chunk of data, or a sequence of commands that takes advantage of a bug, glitch, or vulnerability.
What is an exploit?
Yes,
no, it's
also
exploit.
Exploit. Yes, exactly. All right, next. A computer threat that tries to exploit information system vulnerabilities that are unknown to others and or the software developers.
zero. Oh, what is zero day?
We will not accept Flicta's answer, Jaylee.
What is Peter had it?
Peter said it. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
What is zero day?
Exactly. A zero day attack occurs on or before the first day of a developer's awareness of the attack. These are the dangerous ones, as there's usually not much you can do about them. They're also very rare and are probably being saved for targets bigger than yourself. Next up. Also known as a bucket brigade attack or a Janus attack. This is a form of active eavesdropping in which the attacker makes independent connections with the victims and relays messages between them, making them believe they are talking directly to each other over a private connection, when in fact the entire conversation is controlled by the attacker.
What is a man-in-the-middle attack?
Yes, yes, yes. Also known as SRJs. Jaylee's in the lead. Too bad we're not keeping a score, but we might do a Final Jeopardy thing.
And we're not drinking beers.
Yeah, that's why we're getting them all right.
In Hacker Jeopardy, you have to drink.
Your score is based on how well you answer questions, coupled with how many beers you can drink.
Your
I think someone
drinks.
Actually lost some beer on stage three times. Yeah, I only lost one Four Loko, just for the record. All right, also known as SRJs, these people often run malevolent pieces of interpreted computer languages in the hopes of becoming elite hacksers.
Say that again.
Also known as SRJs, these people often run malevolent pieces of interpreted computer languages. Scripts.
What are scripts?
Oh. Yeah.
What is SRJ?
I'll get to that. It's script running juveniles.
I've never heard that term.
Okay, that's kind of half made up. In the past, most attack tools came in the form of scripts or programs that could be downloaded from the internet. These would often be used by script running juveniles or script kiddies who had the ability to recycle someone else's program but lacked the understanding of how the tools worked or what the ramifications of using them actually were. Something I noticed this time around was a large number of pre-rolled devices being sold in the vendor area that came complete with commercial packaging, instruction manuals, and point-and-click interfaces. So you don't even have to know how to run a script now. You just plug it in, fire up a web browser, and hit the tool's web interface. While I don't want to mention any names of specific tools on the air, I'll bring a couple of them out to the next Geek Gathering for demonstration purposes. Now, none of this was intended to scare you, only to make you aware that more and more people are learning how to effectively attack home computer systems. To stay safe, you want to make sure your system is completely current with all available operating system patches, antivirus definitions, and application updates. And while this may sound like a lot of work, most of it can be scheduled to take place behind the scenes while you're asleep. So make sure you have automatic updates enabled in everything that supports it. Also, never click on a suspicious pop-up or visit questionable sites. That's actually the way most people get into systems. So when in doubt, close it, don't click it. That's it for your DEFCON definition diversion, and that's that for Barrett time.
That was fun. That was a fun Barrett time.
You won.
Yay, I'm a hacker. Although, if you witness actual Hacker Jeopardy at DEFCON, you just go, my God, how does anybody even know this stuff? There's some pretty intense questions. All right, so that was good fun for Barrett time, but we're going to resume our regular call-in program at Technology Bites. So if you want to be on the air with us, 713-526-5738. And I just want you, I do think I think part of the reason why that Barrett time was so good and so entertaining is there was no Four Loko involved. So.
Can I get some computer help here while?
Sure.
I have had 3 kernel panics.
On your OS X Lion?
Yes, on my MacBook Pro. Here.
Have you gone through and added anything back? Like, I know you removed the AV when you had that problem. Have you gone and added any new applications upgraded?
No. Mm-hmm.
Are you accessing anything you haven't accessed before since the upgrade?
Yes. Although I wasn't with the first.
Well, still. But let's look at that and see if it points us in the right direction.
The first time this happened, which was today before the show, I was running Chrome. I was running Echophone, which I run all the time, and that was about it. And I brought up a particular web page, and it gave me the gray screen.
In Chrome. Okay.
And then I'm updating. It happened again while I was updating VMware Fusion. And then again when I brought it back up, and everything came up automatically, because it does that on Lion, which something to keep in mind. Well, not only irritating, but if you have a program that's causing problems and Lion brings it back up, it will cause the problem again, which is what happened. And the third time when I relaunched it, it came back and it gave me the opportunity. It said, do you want to not launch everything?
Right. Well, that's the same thing Windows will do. If it comes back and says that if you launch a program and it crashes, it'll say this program caused a problem. Do you want to restart it in safe mode or do you want to not load it?
But Lion automatically brings everything up back to you, whether you want it or not, if it just shuts down. The second time, it was smart enough to know maybe I shouldn't do that. It asked. But, you know, I've had three different instances. In two cases, I was running VMware Fusion. The other case, it was something else. I'm worried about my memory.
You think maybe the new memory? Well, you know, you took that thing to beyond the memory that it will accept. Or
no,
that it's-
no,
no.
No? No, that's on the old black MacBook. So no, actually, that was on my iMac.
Okay, so this one is
has standard.
Okay, because I was worried about that on when you told me that you were extending the memory beyond what they recommended. So I've seen that cause problems.
No, my iMac's fine. So
well, if you continue, my suggestion would be that if you continue to have kernel panics, I would back out of your memory upgrade, and just go back to your original memory configuration and see what happens. I mean, it'll slow you down for a little while, but it can tell you if you got bad memory or not.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, I've been running for a couple of months with the memory upgrade without a problem. So I don't know.
How's your disk space?
Lots of it.
Lots of it.
Room to spare.
Have you defragged it? Have you run a check disk? Just kidding. Wow. No, no. I haven't had it. I've got the same basic computer you have, right? 13-inch MacBook Pro has been running like a champ.
Yep. Since you have eight in there.
Huh?
Yeah, upgraded to 8.
Yeah, I upgraded it to 8, just like you did. And it's been running like a champ since I've had Lion installed, so I don't run Chrome. Maybe that's it.
Well, and I do run like the... I don't run the Canary build. I run the developer build. And so...
Does Chrome load anything up in the background? Has it got any kind
of... Yeah, it does. It does.
So even though
In fact, one of the things Chrome does, it will sync with your other instances of Chrome. And I installed the Kindle iPad app in Chrome this morning. And so
Apple's coming for you.
Let's see if it picked it up. Let's see if it picked that up. I wonder if that's...
Does the Mac have any kind of debugging tools or crash, you know, like...
It does.
Are they easy to read?
The Kindle app didn't get synced in here, so... not that it is reporting back to Apple what's going on. I get the offer.
But can you view that log at all?
Yes, it's machine language.
It's all gobbledygook.
Right.
All right. Well, if anybody else out there listening, you know, honest to goodness, has a good idea about troubleshooting Dwight's triple kernel panic, then you're welcome to call in with that. If you're just going to speculate like we just did. Randomly, you know, like maybe it's this, you know. That's one of the things that really kills me when I go looking for an answer on the internet. I put in my question, I find a discussion forum where they're having a discussion about the problem. And these people that are just so quick to chime in with just regurgitating some other piece of information that may or may not actually apply to the problem. Right.
Especially when you read it after someone's put in like really kind of well thought answer. And then some bozo will throw in their like one sentence kind of, oh, did you try rebooting again?
Right.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's no help. And someone actually already has started to have a real conversation. I find that all the time when I'm searching for especially the more obscure answers.
Right. Yeah, it's awfully polluted out there with people who think, you know, just like this radio show is, you know, polluted with people who think they know what they're talking about. All right. Well, 713-526-5738, Wednesday night between 8 and 10. If you're listening live, you're welcome to call in. 713-526-KPFT, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Miles.
Miles, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah. Good night. Good evening. How y'all doing?
We're good. How are you?
All right, I got a problem with this Acer laptop.
Okay.
And what it does is you'd be using it, and it just power shuts down. And it just does it, like, randomly.
Okay. A lot of times, and now is this when it's running on direct current or on alternating? Is it on the battery, or is it when it's plugged in, or is it both?
No, I don't hardly use it all. Except with the power cord plugged in.
Okay. A lot of times these random shutdowns are a symptom of an overheating problem?
Yes, but sometimes it'll run for 14, 15 hours, no problem. And then you turn it on and in the morning, and the next hour it'll shut down.
Well, it could still be a problem with how the system is managing the heat. I've seen this happen a lot with Dell laptops, because that's what I work with a lot. The system just doesn't, it gets out of sync with how it's trying to keep the system cool. And I found that flashing the BIOS will reset that information on the computer and solve that, clear that problem up. So you might want to check at the Acer website for BIOS update.
Yes, I did that. They sent me a file that's like a different version of the one that I have on there.
Have you installed it yet?
No, because the guy told me if something was to go wrong while you were, updating that file, that you could corrupt the whole system.
That's true, but they generally tend to go okay. The other, if you don't want to go that route, if you want to try something that might be safer but be more involved, you could try reloading the system. But if it's not the BIOS, it's just sounding really like a hardware issue. So it's either the BIOS or a bad piece of hardware that's causing it to shut down randomly.
Well, that BIOS update, do you do that from the command line?
I'm not sure how Acer does theirs. I know, for example, Dell does theirs. You run an executable, you actually double-click on the file, and you run it. And then what it'll do is it'll reboot the system and run the BIOS update and tell you how long it's going to, give you an idea of how long it's going to take and tell you don't power off your computer until this is done. Now, the problem is that if your computer is randomly shutting down and it happens to shut down while you're running that update, it could cause you a problem. How old is the computer? How old is it? Go ahead.
Is there any recovery if that was to happen? Is there any way to recover?
It can be very nasty if it happens. You can basically brick the computer. It doesn't happen very often. I've not actually bricked one. I've had systems shut down and restart in various questionable positions, whether it's a software update or an operating system update or a BIOS update, and I've been able to reboot and recover.
And actually, a lot of modern BIOSes will have a recovery capability from a failed BIOS. I've had that happen, and they recover usually nicely.
But, I mean, the other thing is that, even though it's a laptop and you can't really see all this stuff, you might want to take some compressed air and just try blowing out the fans in any of the opening spots where it might have collected dust in there. I've seen some pretty hairy stuff get sucked into a computer, even a laptop, that buildup can cause heating problems as well.
Yes, I kind of done that a while ago and got as much as I could. I don't see any dust in any of the grills.
Okay.
On the bottom of the computer, I looked at all that.
Well,
and then one other issue with it is it seems like this computer's lost its ability to multitask.
How so?
Well, if I click on Internet Explorer and to open it up, and then I go back to another window that I had open, it was while this Internet Explorer window, develops itself, it's like the computer just kind of stalls out.
How much hard drive space do you have free on this computer?
It's about 40% free.
All right. Well, it's possible that everything that's going on is related to software. If you want to go for the safest but the most involved troubleshooting, you could start by backing up your important files and then reloading this thing back to factory fresh. That won't be hardware dangerous at all. It'll just be time consuming. But maybe with a clean software install, all the drivers reset and everything, maybe that'll smooth it out. Another thing you might want to do, if you don't want to do the software reinstall, is at least update the other drivers for your network card, your video card, your sound card drivers, all of that. That won't hurt you to do, and that might clear it up. Well, I wish you a lot of luck, man. I don't know what else to tell you on that. We're going to have to move on to another call, but if you want to contact me via the website, I can try to offer you some more insight, but we're not going to solve that problem in that phone call, but even though we want to, we'll give you some things to try. at some point with a computer like that that's acting up, you have to make a decision on whether or not you want to go the long way around, the safe way around, or if you just kind of want to, like, bite the bullet and say, I mean, the BIOS update will probably go okay, and it has a very good chance of solving the problem. But it scares people, and I understand why, that if that goes wrong, you don't have a computer that even starts up. So I understand that. But if you have a computer that's randomly shutting down, you do what, that's more a headache than anything else. But you need to get it resolved one way or the other. And it might very well be that you have a hardware issue. If the computer does actually just shut down randomly, it could be memory. It could be the processor.
Did he say how old the machine
was? I didn't get how new it was. It was an Acer. It, apparently not under warranty. All right.
With his problems about multitasking, I would wonder, memory was the thing that came to mind for me. You know, when he's trying to do more than one thing at a time, he said that was causing problems too.
Yeah, it could.
Of course, if it's an old computer, it may be multiple things going wrong at the same time.
No, memory's a good possibility. That's also difficult to troubleshoot because you have to go and buy memory and take memory out and reconfigure it and play with that to see if it levels off. That's a little involved. But yeah, it could be memory, it could be a video card driver, it could just be corrupt software. If it's an older computer and if it's ever been infected with a virus, I mean, the slowness, not necessarily the shutdown problem, but the slowness, I've had computers, they will slow down over time. You just have to reload the system and they'll spring right back. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I think a fast question. I have a 2002 Toshiba satellite. It's like 1400, and it's got a whopping about 248 megs of memory, and it's slow on doing just about anything, and I'm wondering, is it worthwhile to have memory put in it?
No. 2002 laptop, chances are the memory is going to be a little bit more expensive for something in that time frame, but you could... Chances are it'll only go to 512. It'll be lucky if you go to a gig on a computer that old.
Uh-huh.
So you could possibly get it upgraded to 512, maybe a gig. That would improve the performance. But
okay.
But for the amount of money that you're going to pay for the memory on a computer that's that old, that money would be way better spent on a new computer.
And because it's so old, the memory is going to be more expensive because they don't make as much of it anymore, and so it costs them more to make it, and you end up paying more for it.
Right. So you got to probably
what price range are we talking about?
What's the make and model of the? You said it's a Toshiba.
Like Toshiba satellite.
Yeah, but what model? They're all satellites.
I want to say like a 1400 or 1500. I forget which.
You can go to. You can go to crucial.com.
Okay.
And you can have it. They have a memory checker. What did you say that you thought the model was?
It's a satellite 1400 or 1500.
1400 or 1500. If you go to crucial.com, they will actually, you can either put in your make and model number, and it will tell you what memory configurations it supports, and then they sell the memory too. So they'll tell you, they'll tell you how much it would cost to upgrade the memory. I'm looking at how much this computer, it must be batteries. Let's see if I can find something on the memory on this thing. But I really just, strongly recommend,
Well, it's kind of a backup. I've got another computer that's in the shop right now, and so I was having to use this one for my web browsing. That's really all I do with it.
Right. Let me see, trying to find... When you Google search Toshiba 1400 memory, you get posts that talk about taking a trip down memory lane because it's so old. But I think I might have found a website here that's trying to get an idea.
I'm looking on the Crucial site, looking at the list, and there's no satellite 1400.
Okay.
Well, they're seeing there's, let's see.
Yep. Are we talking $10, $100? $500.
I don't know for sure, but I've just about found the 1400 series S151 152 memory to buy 512. It's SODIMM memory. It's $128.89 to get 512 memory.
That's really expensive.
Apparently according to this, it will only go to 512, as I suspected. So you have to take out whatever memory's in there, put in this 512, and you're out $130.
Okay.
But go to Crucial.
I will limp along with it as is.
Yeah, I mean, because for $130, you could probably buy a used notebook that had, you know, a gig of RAM. If you hunted around, you could probably find, something that was maybe 5 years newer or even 2008 to a 2010 computer, used laptop for a few $100 if you hunted around. Might be a better investment than throwing $130 into this thing.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your call.
No problem. Yeah, 2002, you've gotten your money's worth out of your computer. I gotta say, I've got some 2002, 2001 computers that we just set up.
That was the earliest days of Windows XP. Windows XP was released in 2001.
Well, I remember the computers that we had at the company I work for now. I started there in 2001, and I remember the computers that were there that we had, and I sent the last batch of those off to the scrap heap because they're just, I can't even bear to use one. I actually still have one at home. It was the reason why we got an iPad.
That's right. That's the one Cynthia
dug out her old Dell 7500 or whatever it was. It's just this clunker running. It still had Windows 2000 installed on it. And it's like, God, this thing, I can't even be around it. You need an iPad or something. Let's just get rid of this. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next by length of the holding?
By length of the holding, we are going to take Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, hi there. Actually, real quick, for the caller before last, I would recommend removing the battery while it's plugged in. That'll dramatically reduce the heat in the laptop, and when it gets really hot, the CPU a lot of times will slow itself down, or be slowed down in order to try to resolve the heat problem.
Okay, good suggestion.
Anyway, so my question is, background, I'm an IT consultant, and part of what I do is recommend what I consider to be the best solutions to, for particular problems and situations that my, customers and clients might have. Now, I was, the channel, the partner, there's now all these partnership deals between vendors.
Right.
Where, they call them, the referral programs. Well, basically, it's a system of kickbacks. If, I sell so-and-so's product, then they're going to, turn around and, give me some money for it. How does one resolve that sort of ethical dilemma? As, how do I maintain my professionalism and ethics while not, necessarily missing out on a provider that I might recommend anyway? A lot of times, one situation in particular recently has happened where I joined a partnership program for a local networking provider, and, they're the ones that I've worked with, a great relationship, and hands down, in Houston, of all the companies I've worked with, they're, by far the best, in my opinion. Then we move into the Dallas market with this other client, though, and since they're there, I'm tempted to be a little more lazy with my evaluation of potential providers out there. And I'm very conscious of my ethics here. How does one trust the consultant in general?
So how does one trust you as the consultant who's recommended?
I guess the question is, how does one resolve the ethical dilemma between being when you're expected to provide the best solution in an objective manner, but on the other hand, you have, these motivations, other.
You're having a really hard time getting to your point, and I've got to ask you to take a deep breath.
I'm sorry, I'm driving.
Okay.
I think I'd say the ethical thing is if you want to recommend it because you believe in it, maybe not that it's the absolute best, but that it's a good one. If you disclose, if you're clear about that there's this relationship that bears on what you're saying, then that lets the other person make their decision based on full information.
That's kind of where I was heading in my mind too. That disclosure is the prerequisite for a clean conscience.
Right. I mean, you have to just be as upfront as is feasible with your client. And, you know, I guess one way that I might consider how I would reconcile that is, you know, what kind of guarantee or what kind of, you know, what kind of reputation does the company have in terms of backing up the work that they do? You know, do they have references from people that they've done business with? You know, so you could, I guess what you're really asking is how much due diligence should you be required to do in order to cover yourself if that company lets your client down as the contractor?
Well, it's also, I mean, if you know, there's another conflict where it comes to being a hardware vendor for a particular, you know, solution, you know, hardware manufacturer or solution provider, and also at the same time, you know, supposedly being objective about, you know, picking the proper, you know, IT solution for a particular, you know, business objective. So, you know, if I've got, you know, four different storage, you know, types available, one is, you know, a SAN over, you know, a fiber channel, one is, you know, cloud storage, and et cetera, you know, and I've got a relationship, partner relationship with the SAN provider, then I have, you know, an implicit motivation
to recommend that as the solution, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you're getting into some territory that I don't even like to really think about so much, and that's being a sales guy. You know, that's why, you know, I'm not out selling my services. I've hired on with a company and I work for them, and that's how I reconcile that for me, because the idea of going out into the marketplace and selling a service, you know, you can, it's dicey, because, you know, what's the salesman's motivation? I know that there are salespeople, they don't have any investment in the product that they're selling other than to make money off of selling it.
Right, but that's where the trust with the customer originates, is with their sales.
Absolutely.
You're expected to come in there.
But you're asking me to put my brain into the place of a sales guy, and I find that salespeople are sometimes the most unethical people you can deal with. And I don't know how to tell you to be a good sales guy or be a reputable sales guy other than to change professions.
Well, into something that doesn't sell anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough call. I mean, we're really good at marketing ourselves here because we spend 2 hours on the radio giving this stuff away for free every week.
Well, and that's what I end up doing.
That's the ethical dilemma it solves right there.
Yeah, and our motto is always be closing.
Well, listen, man, I don't have a good answer for you. I just say, you know, you're going to have to come to terms with your relationships with your vendors and your customers. And, you know, if you are interested in selling the best thing that you can to the customer and building your reputation with them, and you ignore the financial gains from dealing with your, you know, particular partners. But if you get honest with yourself and you say, I need to make some money, so I've got these relationships set up with these vendors, this is the way I'm going to go, and I'm going to bring these to bear when I go into the market and go to this customer and try to sell them something.
I agree with Scott online. He really does kind of put a point on it. He says you should be working for the customer and not really the vendor. I mean, if you want to be selling certain products, then go get a job with the vendor. But really, your best interest should be with the customer, and just explain to them why you chose one product over another product. And, you know, hopefully they'll agree with you and, you know, go with you. But it's really important to build trust. You know, otherwise you're not going to get that repeat business.
Well, yeah, but if you're working for a company, you know, you're working for whatever company you're working for. And if you're working for a salesman,
It gets complicated. We get these. Yeah, it's tough.
And I know.
An ethics discussion could take up the rest of the show. We don't have time for that. So we're going to have to ethically to our other callers.
You called the high tech Texan.
Yeah.
extraordinaire.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Mike. Sorry we couldn't be more help.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Grimhouse.
Yes.
Ethically.
Ethically.
Who's up next?
Ethically, we should take.
Who should we take next?
All right.
I'll give you 10 cents if you'll take.
I'll give you 15 cents.
Look,
well,
man,
I'll tell you.
If you get the wrong call, you're going to find yourself in the hole.
That's right. Well, let's just go ahead and take the next one who's been waiting the longest, that would be Beaujolais.
Maybe.
Beaujolais.
That's what Groove says, at least.
Gentlemen.
Good evening. Welcome to the show.
This has to do with Home Network.
Okay.
Bought a Panasonic B BDT210 3D Blu-ray disc player. Love it. But then discovered that the Wi-Fi to connect to Netflix and all the other stuff, specifically Netflix, that my old N router was no longer, it wouldn't cut it. So upgraded to a Netgear N600 wireless dual band router, and I'm using the high end of the router, namely the, I'm going off of memory here, it's like a 50 gigahertz.
5 megahertz.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
For that, and our computers are happy that where they were at the 2.4.
Okay, so yeah, they're all still connecting G, I guess. Well, it's not G. It's still they still connect in at 2.4.
They're connecting, I believe, on the N because mm-hmm. we have the used to have just the WPA, and now I'm WPA2 mm-hmm. PSK, and the Blu-ray is through the let me see, the profile is through the AES, which is all new to me, but it's the fastest signal, evidently. I have a twofold question for you. The first is on this router. It has what they call Netgear calls a ReadyShare USB storage access, which is a port that I could connect a hard drive, basically, and we would be able to access it through our Blu-ray and also through our computer.
Right. Any device connected to the network can connect to this access point and then access that drive as a network share or network.
Right. And so my question is kind of one and the same. It's like my biggest concern about that is like, that's great, but how do I know as far as security, you know, like files that if it's over the airwaves that somebody can't access that?
Well, they'd have to get access to the router to be able to access the files on it. So they have to get on your network. So they either have to come in with a piece of Ethernet strand and connect to the Ethernet port of your router to get an IP and get on your network, at which point they could access that. Or they'd have to be able to connect to your Wi-Fi, which is where the WPA and all of that comes in, is designed to not allow unauthorized people to connect to your network.
Right.
You can go a step further with that by hard coding access to the MAC address of the various devices so that nobody else can connect, even if they had your encryption password, because it only allows the MAC address, the hardware address of the device, to connect to it in the first place, if you were worried about that.
Okay. I'm looking. So what do I do? Google that?
You Google MAC address, or restrict wireless access by MAC address,
and that's actually in the router settings. There's going to be a page that's devoted just to that.
But the hard part is determining the MAC address of your various devices. Like the Blu-ray will probably have a decal on it or something. It probably has the MAC address listed there.
Depending on how new it is, a lot of times it'll show you connected devices, and you can just go in and click accept and whitelist that connected device.
Well, I did that, and there's also a utility on the Blu-ray itself.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain this other than it was like I had to do what they called, I call it like a hard boot, where I had to...
Right, where you rebooted the device and it came up through a diagnostic screen or something like that?
Yeah, well, on the router itself, I had to press the router.
Right. There's a button that lets you automatically pair...
Exactly.
Right.
Right, yes. So I did that, but here's the other aspect of it. So I don't get you guys in trouble, we have C as an IP provider, company by the name of C.
Comcast, you can say it.
Oh, okay, Comcast. And the deal is when we're watching Netflix, we have Netflix and we also have Amazon on their Amazon Prime, and they have the HD movies. Amazon, we have no problem. On Netflix, and why I bought the router is I called them when we first bought the Blu-ray, and they told me that their signal, they pinged it and said the signal was fine. But the deal is that I had somebody at Microsoft at the Galleria this last weekend. My wife and I were there, and really cool stuff there. And this sales girl was telling me that Comcast, what they'll do is they start paring down your bandwidth. depending on how much usage.
Well, they will only if you reach a certain cap. And if that, no, actually, they'll just shut you off.
They'll cut you off. So, no, yeah. that was misinformation you got.
Well, and that's what I was wondering, because yeah. we'll be rocking along fine, and there seems like 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and there's another time that I don't remember, that if I try to connect then, I can't seem to get on Netflix. I have to wait like half an hour, and then it's fine, and I can
you,
be honest.
You have to remember that particularly with Comcast, cable uh-huh. bandwidth is a shared resource.
Right.
There may be something going on in your neighborhood where someone else is like sucking down some serious bandwidth at that time.
Right.
Or I've had experiences with cable where the cable company will run some kind of a test at a specific time of day,
right?
And it causes an issue,
right?
But also with Netflix may tell you, oh, we're wonderful, but I have Comcast. I have a 20 megabit connection with Comcast.
Uh-huh.
There are times when Netflix chokes and Amazon does not, and I think it's Netflix.
Yeah, I've had some ongoing problems with connecting to Netflix where it'll just be unavailable.
Uh-huh.
And they just don't respond, or you're connected to it, and all of a sudden it'll drop the connection, the movie or whatever you're watching, it'll just stop.
Yeah, our training manager called us saying, so we're trying to stream a Netflix movie, and it just wouldn't go. They thought it was because we didn't have enough bandwidth, but we had 50 megs of fiber, and it was fun. It was Netflix around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Huh.
Right, yeah, so that, you know, and I know that they're on the in Portland, so there's a two-hour difference, and I was thinking, well, that's noon for them. Maybe on the West Coast, that's when they're getting hit with a lot of, you know, a lot of people around noontime. But love it. Watched 74 episodes of Rescue Me. And, you know, it's really great. I'm just kind of curious. I was kind of like, you know, as much as I love this Blu-ray player, there's things now that I wish it could do, which would be surf the Internet, which would probably be the next version, or there's probably already another one. I didn't really want a game console to do that.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I've got a Samsung internet-connected TV and a Samsung Blu-ray player that's internet-connected. I'm not using the internet connection on the Blu-ray because I have the TV and I have a Roku box.
Uh-huh.
But none of those devices surf the web.
Really?
In fact, what's interesting is the Samsung almost goes out of its way to not do the web.
Uh-huh.
It has Google Maps on it. But you almost about all you could do is like look at the map. You can't email the map. You can't do anything with the information. You can't get it out of there, and it doesn't go anyplace other than the map.
Right.
And it almost seems like they go out of their way not to. And I'm not quite sure why, but I think it may be a while before that happens.
Right. Right. Well, hey, I really appreciate it, guys, and thanks again.
All right. Thanks for your call, Bougelet.
All right. Bye.
All right. We are. We're starting to wind things down here on Technology Bites. We've got about 15 minutes left in the program of good broadcast solidity there. And there's before we have to, like, make our outros and stuff. So we may want to move this along a little better. We've got 4 calls in the queue, so we'll see how it goes. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, great. Couple quick questions. I'm looking at buying like a little computer, a laptop, just drag around with me, running Windows 7. What's the minimum requirements for running Windows 7?
The minimum
requirements? And memory wise.
How much do you have a computer you're thinking about loading it up with, or you're thinking about buying one with it?
No, pre-loaded? I just want to buy inexpensive. You know, they've got all these, they're right above netbooks. You know, they don't have Atom processor.
They're not going to, let me just say this real quick, and I'll let Dwight chime in. They're not going to sell you a computer that has less than the requirement to run it. So if you buy a computer that's preloaded with Windows 7, it's got the minimum hardware specs to do it.
Okay, I've read about the little netbooks, but they crawl. I mean, the little Atom.
Well, the older ones did. The newer ones are actually a lot better.
Okay.
The minimum specs for Windows 7, and the one you really need to pay attention to, is the amount of memory, and that's 1 gigabyte. But it's very hard now to find one that has 1 gigabyte. Almost all the netbooks you find have at least 2.
Okay.
And that will be more than enough to do the kind of things
you
need to do.
So you probably recommend about 2 gigs of memory.
More if you can get it, and if you're willing to pay for it. But 2 probably is about where you'll feel comfortable at a minimum.
Yeah, good sweet spot. Okay, next question up. I've got an old Dell desktop of Ostro, and it runs just fine. It's 2006. And I bought some memory for it. DDR, 4000 megahertz, PC 3200. And I'm going for 512 to 1 gig. And I had a friend of his had a computer virtually identical to mine. He loaded it into there. And once you plug it all in there and you plug all your peripherals in there and then you turn the computer on, it comes up on the screen, everything's loaded fine. It asks you this simple question. It says, F1 to continue or F2 to set, you know, or reset or something, whatever. Which one are you supposed to, like, click on?
Should F1. It's probably, F1? It, what it's probably doing is it's popping up a message to let you know that the memory has changed.
Right, exactly.
And if you accept the changes, it's fine. You hit F1, you go on. If you hit F2, it's going to take you into the BIOS where you can, you know, see if there's a problem. But if you know you made the change, then F1 is all you need, should be all you need to hit.
Okay. Great. That's what I need to know.
All right.
Because I've got it loaded in there. Third question, real fast.
No. Third question. No, sorry. No, third question. Got to go. Sorry about that. We got three people holding on and time running out. All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Rufus.
Rufus.
Hey, how you doing?
I just had a moment with your name. Yeah, we're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I've got a...
Loden Wainwright, that's what I was thinking of. Rufus.
Yeah, yeah, I've got a... I've got a Dell 1012 Mini Inspiron netbook. Has worked fine. It's about 2 years old. Suddenly, it's not booting up. I don't get an... A disk drive, activity light, just a pile of light. And at first, I thought maybe the disk drive wasn't running, but then I took the outer frame off and could actually hear the thing spinning, but nothing's happening. Hello?
I'm sorry to hear that. Yes. How old is the computer?
2 years. It was made in 2009, yeah.
And so you turn it on, you're not getting anything to the display?
I'm not getting maybe the display wire is off, or I considered that possibility, but I thought I would see
You should have something posting. Something should at least post, like the splash screen for the manufacturer should show up.
Yeah, nothing. What if the display wire is off or something, or if it's out of
The monitor's broken or if the display is broken, that could be an issue. It could be that the video card's having a problem. Do the lights come on? Does the hard drive activity light seem to be blinking or anything?
That's what I'm saying. There's no activity light, and yet it is spinning. I thought it wasn't spinning, but
are you sure it's spinning and you're not hearing like the fan or something?
Well, I don't think these things had a fan. It's more like sort of convection cooling or something.
And I think all computers have to have a fan.
That little tiny thing, I think I
it's got to have a convection. What does it use? Heat to pull in air to cool itself off?
Some really low power devices don't have fans.
Don't have fans. Yeah.
Yeah, it just sort of bleeds it off through a vent and
well, you could try hooking up to an external monitor.
I tried that and nothing happened.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did, yeah.
But nothing comes up on the display at all. If you're not getting anything on the display at all, there's really not a lot of direction you can go with something like this.
Right, right. There's no display and no activity light from the hard drive, and yet it's turning.
It sounds like maybe a motherboard. I mean, that sounds like a
bad
motherboard.
Like the system has got a problem that I don't think we're going to be able to fix on the air.
Okay, here's one little tidbit. You were talking about tablets. I just found a used old TC-1000 compact tablet from back around 2000.
I would not even touch that thing.
Where could I find a stylus for something like that in the marketplace?
eBay.
You're looking for the stylus to go with the TC-1000 or a device?
Yeah, somebody must have bought a new one, but they bought the stylus for the succeeding model, which didn't use a powered stylus. They came out with a second model, which was improved, but used a different touch system.
Have you checked the accessories area on the HP website?
Haven't tried that.
Yeah, look on the accessories area in HP's online store. They may have
one. Yeah, but you wouldn't touch one of those, huh? It's slow as heck, but it's a cute little thing.
It's a cute thing, but boy, that was slow, and the screen is dark because of the way that the touch thing works.
But it's got it solves the iPad's problem of having that virtual keyboard by having that little one that hooks up, that swivels and hooks up to the bottom.
Have you played with a touch keyboard yet?
Well, no, this one doesn't use it.
No, but I'm asking you. I mean, it sounds like you're trying to avoid it. I was wondering if you'd actually had any experience with a touch keyboard.
Not in the big, not in the iPad version, but I heard there were complaints about the...
Try it.
Try really? It. You that might be good, surprised.
Yeah, go to the Apple Store and try it.
I was, when I bought my first smartphone, I bought the Android Google phone because it had a keyboard. And I said, that's the reason I'm getting this over an iPhone. It's got a physical keyboard. And right. I was sold on that. And then the next phone that I bought didn't have a physical keyboard. I thought, this is going to be tough. Has not been tough. It has actually been quite fun to use. And now that I have an iPad with that size keyboard, not a problem.
Okay. I appreciate it, guys.
I wouldn't spend money on something that's just slow and awkward and unsupported.
Oh, it's just a novelty, and I just like the form factor on it. In fact, I just like the form factor.
Okay. Well, good luck, and maybe you can find the stylus on eBay or something.
But on the original question, you think it might be a motherboard issue?
I think you got a problem with a system board, or that's what it's probably got to be. Because
right.
You're not getting any display, you're not getting any indicator lights, you're just getting a hard drive trying to power up, and nothing else is happening.
All right, guys. Great show here.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right. Two calls in the queue. Really about 6 minutes left in the show before we start our outro. I'm sure we can do this.
Speed round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Speedy.
Well, then we'll take line two, George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi there. I suppose I'm going to take this up with Comcast, but they'll charge me for trying to fix this. They sent me a router. It's a Netgear N150 WNR1000 V2 router. And it works quite nicely with everything I have with my Roku box and a radio that I have. However, it won't work with my laptop. I can't get it to work with my laptop if the encryption is turned on. If I turn the encryption off, it works fine. But if I turn it to either WPA or WPA2 or whatever, I can't get it to connect to my laptop.
What's the OS on your laptop?
And it's Vista. And I understand, I did do a little research. I understand this particular router may be incompatible with Windows Vista. I can't believe that they can send these routers out and not have some kind of patch to it, some kind of thing to it. I am eventually going to call Comcast, but they say they may charge me to come out and fix it. I don't want to do that.
They'll charge you to come out and fix it if it's not their problem. If they get out there and they find it's something, that's what that is. If you're pretty sure it's the router, you could also take the router to one of their stores.
Okay.
The thing is that if you are using an older computer, it may have Vista on it. It may not be compatible with the kind of encryption that's on the router.
Right.
In which case, you can... go ahead, Barry.
I would say just roll down. If it comes with other encryption, if you can't push like the WPA or something like that, see if you can just go with, with WEP. And even though that's not as secure as everything else, at least it'll get the Vista laptop on there for now.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is to make sure you've got all the updates for Vista. I mean, there could be some Wi-Fi drivers, some wireless drivers that you might be able to get now that would let you you do the higher encryption.
Right. Who makes the computer?
Compaq.
If you go to HP's website and take a look at the drivers that they offer for that model laptop, they might have an updated wireless driver that might solve the problem. Last time I heard from somebody who was having a similar problem, they reloaded their operating system, and all of a sudden it would start to connect using encryption.
Okay, I'll try that also. Okay, thank you then.
All right, thanks for your call, George. All right, and one last call in the queue. Actually, we're going to have some time to spare.
And that would be Kenneth.
Kenneth, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Uh-oh. Hey, Kenneth.
I hear
something. Oh, Kenneth, hello.
He went for a beer.
Kenneth went out.
So much for his error message problem.
Wow. Now we're going to just twiddle our thumbs for 8 minutes. Dwight, get to twiddling.
Hey.
Oh, he's got an iPhone in his hand.
I have an iPhone in my hand. That's not twiddling. There's HTC bought Beats. The Beats by Dr. Dre, folks.
What?
HTC bought them.
It sounds like that's their big announcement for tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Which is interesting because HP, is partners with them on a lot of their consumer products. And so that should be very interesting to see how that affects HP. So we'll have Dr. Dre in HTC.
This Beats by Dr. Dre?
Yes.
Headphone company.
Headphone company. And audio. They've expanded into in-device audio, which means your HTC Android phones could come with some pretty nice sounds.
There's updated audio drivers for the Galaxy S and some of the hacks. If you root your phone and install some of the ROMs on there, there are some updated audio drivers. And apparently, the generic audio drivers that came with the Galaxy phones is not nearly as good as it could have been.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard some really good stuff.
My phone could be louder?
And clearer.
And clearer.
And bassier.
More bass. Wow. More good.
You could get people complaining when you sit next to them at stoplights.
Yeah, that would work.
That would totally work. All right. So, we're wrapping things up here on Technology Bites. It was a good show. It was a good weekend.
It's not an acquisition. It's a strategic partnership and investment with Beats.
Oh.
Not an acquisition.
It's not the announcement tomorrow?
Well, what do we need to mention, Barrett?
Do we need to mention anything about next week's show, or do we just let that sneak up on
it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, if you're... what's that?
It's only 1 week of it.
Oh, it's easy. We're going to be going into fundraiser mode. If you're listening to this show outside of the KPFT's range, you'll probably get to hear a repeat of one of the earlier shows. But for those of us in Houston, we will be spending one episode of fundraising glory as we try to raise money for KPFT. So next week, don't let that be a reason to tune out. We could totally do it. If we raise our goal, whatever it may be, $5 or $6, if we raise that goal... We get it done. We'll get on with the regular show. So, help us have a success. Tune in next week.
Hit the tip jar now.
Yeah, if you go to kpft.org, you can hit the tip jar, and they'll apply that to our overall station goals. So you could really help us out with that. That would be awesome. And, it'll be a fundraiser. Call it the summer sizzle. I've sizzled about as much as I want to this summer, but it'll be an interesting program as we... talk to you about raising money for KPFT. And we also need to figure out if we're going to do a geek gathering coming up.
It would be the Labor Day weekend.
I won't be here that weekend, but if you guys want to do it, I'll be here the weekend before, and maybe I won't be here the weekend after either. So we'd have to do it the weekend before, or you guys would have to do it that weekend. So we'll figure it out. Talk to you more about it during the fundraising episode next week. Are we... Gotta be close to out of time here on Technology Bites. Yay. All right. Well, thanks everybody for participating tonight. Technology Bites brought to you every Wednesday night here on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll see you next week for more Technology Bites.
Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
I'm Victoria Oluwole.
I'm Gloria Johnson.
I'm Darnell Anderson.
AFS is a worldwide nonprofit organization that has been leading international high school student exchange for more than 60 years.
Each year, AFS USA welcomes 2,500 international high school students who come to study in U.S. high schools and live with host families.
We are looking for families in the Houston area to become host families to students arriving in August.
To learn more about hosting for the 2011-2012 school year, visit afsusa.org/hostfamily.
This has been a public service announcement brought to you by the Broadcast Journalism Program at Sharptown High School.
This is KPFT Houston.
The Houston Committee for Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, Inc. is a nonprofit corporation who provides literature to local high schools about the realities of military recruiting, military jobs, and alternatives to military jobs. The Houston Committee for Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, Inc. invites you to their annual fundraising jazz concert on Sunday, September 4th, Labor Day weekend, featuring local renowned jazz pianist Bob Henschen and others. This jazz concert will be held at the Houston Mennonite Church, 1231 Wirt Road. The concert is at 7 p.m. September 4th. All donations are accepted and all are welcome. For more information, call 832-466-1342. This is KPFT Houston.